Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senator Brad Lauger here today to present Senate Bill 592. Senate Bill 592 is very similar to the legislation that we passed last year in reference to the employment law. There are the fundamental provisions, the five or six provisions that were in there, the constitutional guarantee to a jury trial, the managers and supervisors, and the personal liability that was that's been put in place. We fixed that problem. The whistleblower protections, the summary judgment issue, the caps on damages, and the employers having the employers being able to utilize business judgment as a defense. Those were the fundamental issues that were in last year. Those are still conceptually in the bill this year. There have been a series of changes that have happened. I will quickly touch on those changes that we've made. And then probably the best thing to do is go ahead and proceed into witnesses at that point, and we can start hearing the testimony. There are a couple things that came up during our debate on this throughout the process last year that I think were very relevant. And I know as we moved through both the committee process and the floor process that we wanted to make sure that we addressed. One of those, which actually we didn't deal with down here, we actually dealt with once it was in the House. I think it's fair to say some of the folks in the House asked for a bill that it was, it's the right way to say it, less complex, meaning just more straightforward. Senator Justice specifically talked about the actually stating cases in there that we were throwing out and or the jury instruction and some of the issues that were around those. We removed both of those situations from this bill, which I'm hopeful will garner her support. We also know that last year one of the concerns that came up was around the housing component for the Missouri Human Rights Commission. And this year what we did is we put a specific exemption in the bill for the housing claims to ensure that the Missouri Human Rights Commission is not negatively impacted in any way, shape, or form. We added Senator Lamping's language on the federal cap proposal, that if the federal caps would change, the state caps would automatically change along with those. And we ensured that, I don't think it's in here, but it will be in the sub. That is one of the things I need to make sure I put in the sub, is the language that we talked about at the end of last year, ensuring that that Missouri rules of evidence govern the proceeding. So with all of that said, those are the major changes that were made from the bill. Just for the committee's information, in early December, the request was made to begin working with the second floor to try to see if we could come to resolution on something that they would be comfortable signing. To date, that opportunity has not yet presented itself. I visited this morning again with some of the folks on the second floor, and hopefully that we will have that opportunity in the near future. And so I just wanted to share with the committee that as we work through our process here, we are also working through and trying to have dialogue with the executive branch in hopes of not ending up in the same situation we were last year with a good bill that just got vetoed. So with that said, if I'm able to answer the questions of the committee, I'm happy to do so. Otherwise, it's probably more insightful, instructional, to go ahead and begin the testimony of the witnesses, and we can work through the questions as we proceed there.
Any questions on the committee? Senator?
It's a question to you as chairman.
Yes, sir.
You have these changes in front of us. When will we have to make a decision, or when are you bringing this up in committee? Because you're talking about more changes, so is this a fast track or what?
I have just found out that it is a fast track, Senator. I was asked this morning to vote the bill out today. So in full disclosure and fairness, that's not the way we normally operate here. Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which side of this you're on, that is going to be how we operate today.
Do we still go by the historical rules that if one senator hasn't had a chance to read all of the legislation in front of them, that we would postpone it until possible the next day?
Yes, I would be willing to if there is.
I think in all fairness, if you have changes, if you're telling me
that you were interested in making sure you read this, as I think Senator Justice shared, I'd be happy to notice up either tomorrow or Thursday, and we could do it then. I have no problem with that.
I would prefer that. Not that it'll change my mind, but in all sincerity,
yeah,
not to rush it this early.
Nope, that's fair.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, then we'd ask the witnesses to come forward.
I think we're starting with Jim, I believe, is going to.
Very good. And if I remember correctly, this was a pretty long hearing last year, so to the best of everyone's ability, let's keep it to a few minutes, and we'll go from there.
And, Mr. Chairman, it's ultimately your decision, but what you may want to do is find out how many people are here for it and against it and stagger. If I remember right, we staggered last year.
Yeah, that's what we did. So please, by show of hands, here to testify in favor of the bill and then against the bill. Okay, so let's do just that. So to the best of our ability, organize yourselves, favor and here for and against, and we'll alternate then. It's very good. So please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Great. Good afternoon. My name is James Paul. I practice labor and employment law, and I have done so for approximately 17 years. I started out with the Attorney General's office enforcing the labor laws and the discrimination laws, and now I train and defend employers to prevent discrimination, prevent harassment, prevent retaliation, and then to defend such claims in court or before state and federal agencies. I've seen both sides of this issue and understand fully all of the issues involved with discrimination claims, whistleblower claims, retaliation claims. And I hope that I can shed some light on what has happened in the last several years. The system in this area is broken. It can easily be fixed, however. The reason that this issue is broken and that there are problems is these claims have now become an avenue for employees or former employees to bring lawsuits and to leverage settlements or leverage their claims without having any underlying evidence of the discrimination or harassment. And the reason for that is because these claims traditionally, prior to about 6 or 7 years ago, had proceeded in the federal court system and had been allowed to conform to those rules, whereby employees or claimants or plaintiffs in these cases actually had to provide admissible evidence of some type of discrimination, harassment, retaliation. Since then, however, in the state court system in Missouri, under the Missouri Human Rights Act, the rules have completely changed and are now flip-flopped to the point where there is not a level playing field. The words in the statute, the original statute, are that an employer may not take some act against an individual because of his or her gender, race, religion, ethnicity, age, disability, all of the protected characteristics. The statute provides that any adverse action may not be taken against that person because of one of those characteristics. However, in practice, these cases get filed, get prosecuted, and proceed in court without any actual evidence of an underlying discriminatory motive or purpose. Instead, what these claims hinge on is the simple unfairness or adverse description of what happened, such as a layoff, a demotion, a discharge, whatever the Employment Act is. And, of course, we can all agree that it's unfair when someone loses their job or it's unfair when someone is demoted. But that's not what the law has ever been, and it's not what the law is or what the law should be. The law is that employers and employees should be free to arrange whatever relationship, engage in whatever relationship under the confines of certain laws and parameters such as minimum wage and overtime pay, other safety rules, things like that, and subject to the discrimination laws. However, now it has become a situation where any employee, and I rattled off several characteristics of which employees may be protected: gender, race, religion, disability, age. I'm protected. I'm 41 years old, and I'm protected from age discrimination. Almost every individual who's in an employment situation is going to have one or more protected characteristics. Then when you add protected categories involving complaints, public policy complaints, or whistleblowing, you add in almost a full majority of the workforce that exists in Missouri and across America will have some protection or some employment claim should they suffer some adverse action by an employer. That's all that's needed to file and proceed with these claims. And that then puts us in a situation of the employers have to defend or resolve those claims in some manner. And, of course, the costs of defending are one primary reason why these cases are resolved or settled outside of court, especially since there is a large number of these claims being insured. That certainly is a consideration for the insurance companies and for the employers when it costs, on average, at least $50,000 to defend one of these claims. And I can tell you, one of the more recent claims I've had, it was a situation where a male employee filed a gender discrimination charge.
Excuse me, Mr. Paul, you're at the five-minute mark now, so for purposes of brevity, we're going to ask you to stop now at this point if you want to sum up in a few seconds, and then we'll take questions from the committee.
Sure. So I think that the important points of this legislation is, one, to make sure that the standard is such that employees or plaintiffs in these cases have to provide evidence or their cases will not survive dismissal by the court, number one. Number two, that there are damage caps for non-pecuniary damages. Economic damages, loss of pay, those aren't subject to the caps or limits. But things such as pain and suffering and punitive damages would be subject to the same caps that exist under federal law. And then three, the whole issue that I hadn't addressed yet of individual liability, where any supervisor or manager can potentially be an individual defendant. Some of these cases have four or five or more individual defendants in addition to the company, the corporate or organizational employer. This legislation would fix and address those issues to create a level playing field.
Good. Thank you. Questions for this witness? Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Paul, you mentioned during your testimony that the rules have changed. Who changed the rules?
Well, the rules have changed because previously, when these cases were litigated in federal court or in state court for that matter, employers always had the ability to defend themselves and require plaintiffs to submit evidence of discrimination, harassment, retaliation. The Missouri Supreme Court, however, and the courts of appeals over the last several years have basically eviscerated the ability of an employer to ask for dismissal of a case when there is no basis, when there is no evidence of the discrimination. So the rule with regard to moving for summary judgment, which is the legal procedural avenue to have a case dismissed prior to trial, in effect, does not exist. The Missouri Supreme Court has made very clear that employment cases should, for some reason, be an exception to the rule for summary judgment, meaning that if a case does not have enough evidence to get to trial, it shouldn't go to trial. That exists in every type of case that's filed in Missouri courts. However, with these long line of cases, both at the Missouri Court of Appeals and the Missouri Supreme Court, they have put the burden or the barrier so high for employers to be able to prevail on the summary judgment that these cases cannot get dismissed prior to trial, which drives then either the settlement cost up or the risk of having to go through the expense of trial and then being subject to, obviously, an adverse verdict.
So the rules over the period of time that existed changed through a change in court precedent?
Correct.
Okay, so not a change to statute for as long as we could remember the statute meant or intended such and such, and that's the way it was handled in the courts. Until recently, the courts have changed that precedent to something else. So what needs to happen is the legislature needs to redefine its intent of the law, and that's what we're addressing here.
That's a very good way to put it, and to summarize that the statutory language, which I explained a few minutes ago, because of, you may not take an act because of some type of discrimination, has been evolved and converted and transformed and manipulated into now the standard is that one of these protected characteristics is somehow a contributing factor to a decision among whatever other factors or legitimate rationale there might be for taking some action. And so that has been converted into now a situation where an employer is not able to defend itself or avoid having a trial, a very costly and risky trial, which, you know, for cases that deserve to go to trial and where there is some evidence of discrimination or harassment, this bill and the statute would not be changed to prohibit or change any protections from discrimination or harassment or retaliation. All it would do would provide protections so that cases that don't have any type of substantive merit or evidence would not get to that stage, to the litigation stage at trial.
Other questions? Senator Justice.
You were talking about protected categories. Is sexual orientation a protected category in the state of Missouri?
Under the Missouri state law, currently, no.
And what about on the federal level?
It is not under the federal level either, although there have been several amendments proposed at the federal level. Several states do have that as a protected characteristic. Missouri does not.
Okay, so right now if someone's fired because they are gay or perceived to be gay, they would not have a cause of action under Missouri state law for that specific issue. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Other questions? Ms. Paul, thank you for your testimony. I'd ask someone who's against the bill to come forward, identify themselves, and also to make sure they have their witness form. Sir, welcome.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Very good.
My name is Mark Jess. I, like Mr. Paul, have been on both sides of this fence as an attorney. I'm one of the founding members of Employee Rights Law Firm. We represent individuals exclusively in employment law claims in the state of Missouri. Prior to that, I was a partner at the law firm of Brian Cave and headed up the Kansas City office of the Labor and Employment Department. I have to respectfully disagree with just about everything you've been told. This bill, Senate Bill 592, is a so-called solution in search of a problem. There is not one shred of evidence, not one iota, that indicates any employer ever left the state of Missouri or refused to expand in the state of Missouri or refused to come to the state of Missouri because of the Missouri Human Rights Act. Absolutely none. The second point that I'd briefly like to go to, because I know your time is very valuable, is this so-called individual liability issue. I would submit to this committee, respectfully, this bill should be called the Harassers Protection Act. It says that if someone sexually harasses my daughter or discriminates against someone's mother because of her age or retaliates illegally against someone's uncle, it says that the person who actually did it should bear no personal responsibility. I grew up in Southwest Missouri. That does not sound like conservatism as I know it. Personal responsibility is incredibly important. And the cynical reason that that part of this statute is in there, this bill wants to get rid of individual liability for one reason and one reason only, and that is to protect out-of-state businesses. If you believe what the authors of this bill are putting forth, they would much rather that employers be in federal court, where I think almost anyone who practices realizes that it's the employer that has an unfair advantage. And so what this bill does is seeks to protect those businesses that are not incorporated in Missouri or don't have their headquarters here. Because that way, even if we file in state court, it can be removed to federal court. And I would submit to you, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for this Senate to protect out-of-state corporations at the cost and to the detriment of Missouri corporations. The other thing that I'd like to talk about very, very briefly is this so-called summary judgment standard. First of all, these cases have been going in the state court and heard jury trials in front of state court since 2003. So respectfully, when I think his name is Mr. Paul, indicated it was 6 or 7 years ago, that's simply not accurate. And the case law that has come down were issues that had never been presented to the Missouri Supreme Court or the Courts of Appeals anymore. All they did is take the plain language of the statute. But what this bill tries to do is create a different summary judgment standard and a different procedure only for Missouri Human Rights Act cases. It goes so far as to suggest that a trial judge should make issues of credibility, those determinations, at the summary judgment stage. That is not true for any other civil claim, and it makes no sense for the trial judge, under our constitutional system, to take away a litigant's right to have a trial by jury of their peers. This is a cynical bill. I believe it to be sponsored in large part by Enterprise Rent-A-Car because they want to weaken whistleblower protections that are in current law, and by the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Missouri. And I think they're pulling the wool over the eyes of a lot of the folks in the Senate and the House because, again, this is a so-called solution for which there's not a problem. The last thing that I'd like to address is the so-called damages caps. There are no damage caps for Section 1981 claims, either punitive or economic damages, Section 1981 claims under federal law. As a part of the Civil Rights Act of 1991, so that's a long time ago, Congress said, okay, we're going to give folks the right to a jury trial under Title VII, but we're going to impose these caps. Those caps have never changed. The caps have no place here. This statute, the Missouri Human Rights Act, actually predates Title VII. There have never been caps on damages, and there's no reason to put them on now. Finally, the caps, as I understand it from the last witnesses, are intended only to apply to punitive damages. Well, we've already got a punitive damage cap in the state of Missouri, and it applies to these claims. So again, we're finding a so-called solution to a problem that respectfully does not exist.
Thank you, Mr. Jess. Questions for this witness? CNN, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. And where should I drop this off, sir?
You can just put it over there.
Thank you.
Great.
There was a case that the Missouri Chamber talked about, and as a part of a written statement, I provided what was actually presented to the jury in closing argument so that you know what the facts really involved. That was Griffin and Lowe versus the city of Kansas City.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Someone in favor of the bill will come forward to testify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chip Castile. I'm Senior Vice President of Public Policy for the St. Louis Regional Chamber and Growth Association. The RCGA is the Chamber of Commerce and leading private sector economic development organization for the greater St. Louis metropolitan area. And as such, we are committed to protecting and strengthening the business climate in Missouri. We believe, along with the large number of members of the coalition that supports this measure, that a series of court decisions that you've heard talked about has indeed eroded Missouri's employment laws and begun to tip the scales against employers. We think this measure will improve the state's business climate by strengthening and restoring balance in this area. It includes provisions that, as you've heard, that limit the liability of managers and supervisors, mirror the federal standard of proof in discrimination cases, implement reasonable damage caps, tighten whistleblower protections to apply only to cases where an employee asserts that there's been an actual illegal act. And we, what I'd like to just leave you with is that this measure and a couple of others that are in the 2012 Business Climate Coalition agenda have arisen from employers all over the state who do indeed believe these are real issues and not in search of a solution, but indeed are real issues. It's supported by a very broad range of private, public, educational, and nonprofit employers. So we urge its approval.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for this witness?
Thank you
very much. Someone in against the proposition? Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Eric Kriegel. I'm the Director of Investigative Operations for the Missouri Commission on Human Rights. And the Commission on Human Rights opposes this bill because we believe that it endangers the federal funds that we receive from EEOC and from HUD. We receive approximately $1.18 million in federal funding from the EEOC and from HUD. And in order to contract with EEOC and HUD, they have to find that the Missouri Human Rights Act is substantially equivalent with the Federal Fair Housing Act and the Federal Civil Rights Acts that EEOC enforces. Currently, they have determined that the Missouri Human Rights Act is substantially equivalent with those laws. Based on their comments in past years about similar legislation that has been introduced, we are concerned that they would find that the Human Rights Act would not be substantially equivalent to the Federal Fair Housing Act, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or the Americans with Disabilities Act, and they may then choose not to contract with us because the state law is not substantially equivalent. Federal funds make up about 70% of the Commission's budget. And with the state in facing the financial challenges that it has, if we were to lose that federal funding, the state would not be in a position to, you know, make up for that loss.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions, Mr. Senator Parsons?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, Senator Lemke brought up a while ago that this change through the rule process or through the courts in recent time, were we getting federal funding before then?
Say again, sir.
Were we getting federal funding before then? Did it have any implications then on federal funding?
It did not affect.
So if we actually went back to the way it was, why would there be an implication that the federal funds would change?
Because of some of the provisions in the bill would not be consistent with federal law.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Senator Lemke.
I'm sorry, sir. Who are you representing?
The Missouri Commission on Human Rights.
Okay. The federal money that you're concerned about, does that pay your salary?
Many people's salary in the commission.
Yours in particular?
I don't know how it's divided up, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Mr. Cole, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Ray McCarty, president of Associated Industries of Missouri. We support returning the Missouri Human Rights Act to use the same standards as the Federal Human Rights Act. And for the same reasons that you've heard before, I'm not here to really provide lengthy testimony, but just answer your questions. Be happy to.
And are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
In the interest of time, I also have witness forms from Brad Jones from the National Federation of Independent Business and Tony Reinhart from the Ford Motor Company.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next witness in opposition.
Hello, good morning, or good afternoon to all of you, people of the committee. My name is Sarah. I'm representing Deaf Inc. from St. Louis, Missouri. It's a Deaf Empowerment and Awareness Foundation. I want to speak in opposition to the bill. If you can look at your bill on page number 5, line 19 to 26, how can we ensure full due process when this is able to remove the process where a deaf person can be able to receive proof and assistance for their, I'm sorry, interpreter error. Can you repeat? The deaf person may be able to obtain further proof through the discovery process. And also on page 6, line 2A, if this was capped, many deaf people are paid less than hearing people in their jobs, and they would be unable to afford a lawyer, so they would likely not be able to, they would need to resort to an attorney on a contingency basis, which usually that's about 33%. It tends to be about 33%, and most people, most lawyers, most attorneys would turn down that because of the finances. So we want to know why it is your desire to reduce the rights of deaf people to be able to work. We deaf people have had much difficulty working, and we want to empower the deaf to be able to be employed so that we can be productive members of our community. It's your responsibility should be to the people of Missouri before your responsibility to the businesses of Missouri. That's not part of your job here for Missouri. So to ensure that the businesses are not discriminating against deaf people. It should be what your job is. So if they do discriminate, they should face consequences. Discrimination is wrong, and this bill, Senate Bill 562, makes it seem as if they can take advantage of deaf people and they won't have to pay consequences. So if this passes, we feel that it will put us back to many years ago, the situation of deaf people, and that the work that's been done to empower deaf people in the community will be undone. So why are you set on setting us back? We do not support this bill. Deaf Inc. out of St. Louis does not support this bill, nor a bill like it. We want to stop it before the summary judgment. People should not be stopped from taking their cases to trial. We have the right to due process. So what happens to our freedom of speech? What happens to our freedom to... It's just like if you imagine taking advantage of a person to make them work hard and then take away their job. 90% of you will be diagnosed with hearing loss at some point in your life. So imagine if your job was taken away from you because of hearing loss. That's the sort of situation that we're talking about for you, your children, your grandchildren in the future. Thank you for your time and patience.
And thank you for your testimony. Are there questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very much again.
Good afternoon. My name is Rich Aubuchon. I serve as the General Counsel for the Missouri Chamber of Commerce. And yes, we support this legislation. The reason that we support this legislation is because we represent business throughout the state of Missouri who are telling us as an association that the law which we currently have, which differs significantly from the federal standard, the Civil Rights Act, offers a pro-plaintiffs atmosphere by which Missouri employers are harmed. That said, I'd like to point out just a few small things that have been discussed up to this point in time to clarify some of the issues. I won't go over the testimony otherwise. There was some discussion in regard to housing claims. I believe that the senator has made every attempt to exempt housing claims and housing practices from the arguments that were otherwise brought forward last year that, if they had merit, were accounted for. And if you can look on page 7, subsection 7, line 70, it exempts housing claims from the punitive damage cap, which was one of the issues that they brought forward. The second issue that's been discussed is in regard to due process. Now, that's a broad issue. And certainly one of the things that, that was brought up last year was in regard to, I mentioned a Price Waterhouse. It was a case that essentially refers to burden shifting. It's not a violation of due process to initiate summary judgment, which is a means of foreclosing litigation that otherwise doesn't have a valid claim. Discovery will exist up to that point. You will have the opportunity to interview. You will have the opportunity to deposition, interrogatories. And if the claimant, the person who brings forward the case, proves direct evidence, then you can go through the direct evidence argument. Then if there's indirect evidence, then they can bring forward an argument of indirect evidence. And then the cases that have interpreted these types of issues over the past are still going on today. The federal courts, I guarantee you, as early as even October, have relied upon this type of burden-shifting analysis and summary judgment, which is unavailable here in the state of Missouri. So, no, I don't think that it violates your due process to utilize summary judgment with the burden-shifting analysis, which is set forward in this legislation. And I don't believe that the legislation differs from the federal standard. In fact, it mirrors the Federal Civil Rights Act in almost every regard.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for this witness? Senator Green.
One question. I was at a reception about 6 weeks ago, and your president was one of the speakers at the reception, and in that speech, he had mentioned Missouri's in the top 5 or top 10 in business-friendly states. Some article, are you aware of that article?
I'm aware of many articles that have referred to. Some have said lower, some have said higher even.
And what article is that says we're in business?
I'm not familiar with the one exactly that you're referring to, but I think we could find it for you.
Could you please?
I'd be absolutely willing.
I greatly appreciate
it. I think it might even have made it into a press release at some point.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Other questions? I do have one. I do recall last year we heard this bill. We heard a lot of testimony about people that were fearful of losing their rights. We've heard some testimony today. I'm sure we'll hear more. And I just want to, you know, you've mentioned this in your testimony, but just reiterate the idea just to have you confirm that the protections afforded employees as put forth in the Civil Rights Act, all those protections will remain if this legislation were to pass.
Absolutely. This legislation, as drafted, mirrors the Federal Civil Rights Act.
So those employees that consider themselves protected class and all the rights and responsibilities afforded to them, the Civil Rights Act, it's not as if they go from having protected rights to having no protected rights. It's simply reaffirming the Federal Civil Rights Act, those laws, and those protections.
In every respect.
Thank you for your testimony. Next witness against. Good afternoon.
Excuse me. My name is Marty Myers. I'm a trial lawyer from Kansas City. I've been trying employment discrimination cases for the last 23 years. I represent both plaintiffs and defendants. The last case I tried was last month. I represented a company in a bet-the-company type case. It was an employment case, and we were able to fend that off. That's what happens in the state of Missouri under our Constitution. You go before a jury, and you try your case. That's what this bill is trying to change. I want to respond specifically to this notion that it's not a level playing field. This time last year, I did the research. In Kansas City, at least, there's a company that publishes jury verdicts. Every week, we get a little sheet that says these are the cases that were tried, car wreck, slip and fall, product liability, employment cases. And I pulled the last 5 years, year-end summary, and extracted the employment cases from those summaries, about 5 years' worth. And what I found is that, at least in the Kansas City area, admittedly, I don't have data statewide, and I don't have data for St. Louis, but the breakdown of the employment cases plaintiffs won versus defendants won was about 50-50. Now, isn't that what you would expect with a level playing field? So where's the evidence that if the playing field's unlevel, that employees are winning, you know, 75, 80, 90% of the cases? Now, in contrast, what you'll find is repeated studies, and these are in scholarly articles, that when you go to federal court, 85% of the cases are thrown out without a trial on what's called summary judgment. You never get your day in court. The judge decides that you don't have enough evidence, and they're applying a standard that plaintiffs can't meet. So when we face juries, we do about 50-50. I think that's a level playing field. When we don't, and then the federal judges decide, and that's what this case this bill in removing individual liability is attempting to do, is to send people back to federal court where their claims will end up on the cutting room floor in this process that they call summary judgment. The last thing I want to address is this notion of the caps, where you're capping non-economic damages. My experience has been that juries rarely award non-economic damages in these kinds of cases. They give people their back pay. They will sometimes award punitive damages, but they're not big on pain and suffering. But occasionally, pain and suffering is real. I represent a lady right now who contracted hepatitis C. The medical outlook was very favorable for her if she could get this treatment, but her employer decided he didn't want the increased exposure, so he fired her, and she didn't get the treatment. And now her condition is irreversible. She's going to be on disability for the rest of her life. I would ask you to consider whether the caps in this bill are of the one-size-fits-all that would truly do justice to her situation if the jury accepts her claim. I submit to you that they're not, and that's why we should leave these decisions in the hands of jurors who are more than competent to hear the evidence and hand down fair verdicts, pro-plaintiff, pro-defendant, depending upon what the evidence is.
Thank you, Mr. Myers.
Thank you for your
question,
time.
Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would it be your testimony here today that federal judges are incompetent?
No, I don't think they're incompetent. I think they try to protect business. That's their bias. Some people would say 40
federal years judges ago, try to protect business.
Yes, sir. I would think people would say 40 years ago that it swung the other way. There was an excessive protection of individual rights. The pendulum has swung all the way over the other way. State courts say, let juries That's what we have them for, is to decide facts. That's what the Constitution.
So it's not the standard that they actually apply at the federal level. It's the difference between the judges and the pendulum swinging too far one way or the other.
Judges are finding facts under the guise of summary judgment in federal court. And that's what this bill says.
But they use a standard, don't they? I mean, don't those federal judges apply a standard?
Sure.
The
standard is, what would a reasonable person decide?
On whether a case has merit or is frivolous?
What could a reasonable person believe the plaintiff? And they say no. This bill says the federal judge or the state judge could throw the case out. They can find for the defendant, but they can't find for the plaintiff. If they don't find for the defendant, the plaintiff has to. So the plaintiff has to convince both the judge and the jury. The defendant only has to convince the judge. If we want a level playing field, why not write into the bill that the judge can find for the plaintiff if there's enough evidence? That would be a level playing field, but this is not a level playing field bill. It's designed to skew it back in favor of the defendant, similar to what's occurring on the federal level.
Okay. And how long have you been practicing law in Missouri?
30 years.
30 years.
Employment for 23.
Okay. And again, I think we heard testimony earlier that that the standard that at least the legislature in this modern period, you know, is concerned about maybe a shift in precedent over the last 6 years. So when you were practicing, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I mean, did you perceive a problem in the way that cases were adjudicated in Missouri?
No. In Missouri, we weren't trying cases because the early precedent said you couldn't try them to a jury, and so people went to federal court where you could get juries. And in the 90s, federal judges would let you have a trial.
Okay.
So
something's changed in Missouri that has kind of changed the tendency to go to federal court to try these and to try them in state court.
Yeah, a case called State Extra Deal versus O'Malley in 2003, where the Missouri Supreme Court says you can have a jury trial in state court. And people said, well, we can't get one in federal court because of summary judgment. Let's try cases in state court.
So that's the plaintiffs like their chances now in the state courts, correct?
Plaintiffs like to be able to face a jury, which is what the Constitution permits.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Senator Schaefer.
Just so we're clear, you're not implying that a plaintiff can't seek summary judgment in federal court.
I'm sorry?
You're not implying that a plaintiff can't seek summary judgment in federal court.
They can seek it. I've never known of one being granted.
I've had them granted, not an employment case because I don't do employment law. But I just want to make sure because you made it sound like only a defendant can seek summary judgment. But a plaintiff can seek summary judgment in federal court.
I mean,
you get dueling motions for summary judgment in federal court.
It's technically possible, sure. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have a question or two.
Yeah.
You mentioned that half of the cases that go to trial, you know, go both ways. And of the cases that you've brought forward, what percentage of them actually get to trial?
Employment cases? Well, it's true of all cases across the board. Statistics indicate that 95% of all cases are resolved by settlement because most people are risk-averse, both plaintiffs and defendants. I would say the employment cases are probably not different than that. Probably 75-80% of the cases settle.
Or as many as 95%?
95% is a frequently used statistic for all cases, all tort cases.
Okay. And then since 2003, have you only tried cases in state court then?
I'm trying to think. I can't remember a case I've tried in federal court since 2003.
Right. Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question. Are you familiar with the offer of judgment rule in federal court?
Yes.
Are you familiar with the state of Missouri's offer of judgment rule?
Yes.
What's your understanding of the difference between those two?
Well, I think that's a matter of some dispute. I know I've encountered judges that think it's identical. I've encountered other judges that think it's different.
Right.
And I don't know that we have any appellate guidance on that.
Do you think that the federal offer of judgment rule changes outcomes or makes things different in federal court than it would be in state court?
I've seen the offer of judgment rule used several times in state court cases that I've filed, and I think it can be used to the same effect because there's uncertainty as to how it's going to come out.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'd ask someone in favor of the bill come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Overfelt. I'm the president of the Missouri Retailers Association and a lobbyist for the Missouri Grocers Association, and we want to appear in favor of Senate Bill 592. We do believe that we should mirror the federal remedies.
questions for this witness? I have a question or two. I know a lot of this, there's a lot of discussion about the legal liability and the financial cost, and we focus so much of that attention on specific to when you displace an employee and having to defend that decision. But can you speak a little bit to the steps that your organization, the organizations that you represent, have had to take in terms of the process of both hiring and firing, and how much slower it is now to actually hire somebody, how much harder it is now to fire somebody, even, you know, and how that might have changed in the last 10 years, and just give the committee a sense of how that works and how it's different now.
Well, we've had to hire more attorneys, there's no doubt. And our personnel departments, human resource departments, the costs are much greater in the state than they used to be. Our service letter law, there's a number of things that you have to do to try to protect your client, be it a retailer, corporation. The more exposure you have is always a major concern. So there is no doubt that when the Supreme Court first, our state Supreme Court, first added the right to jury trial a few years ago, and then they started taking away more and more of the protections that we felt we had in our statutes, so we know that there's a cost. I'll just put it this way. I remember growing up that most of the major buildings in downtown St. Louis and Kansas City had corporate names on those, but now I don't see those corporate names anymore. And I see law firm names, and it's a change in our society. It has changed tremendously.
We talk a lot about firing people, yeah. But even the act of hiring someone now has become so cumbersome. I mean, there's people that manage risk in HR specific to hiring, and it's directly correlated to that when you ultimately decide to displace someone, that you've got to have a paper trail that starts from the day you met them to the day you ask them to leave. And a lot of this is all a byproduct of this type of...
Absolutely, and I will we'll look into if we can put a dollar amount to that, and not just for my membership, but we'll do some research.
And your members have what kind of employment turnover? Pretty high, probably, right?
For us, it's very high, especially for training. We train a lot of people, and they take another job at another business with our training, because you know, when any time a new store comes to town, we're going to lose a lot of employees to that new store. And so we have a lot of turnover, and we have to be very careful. It relates to your exposure and how large you are, too. I mean, there's no doubt that if you have a deeper pocket, you're going to have a lot more costs and a lot more legal costs and a lot more HR decisions than if you have six employees or less. I mean, it has become a cost that we have to adjust for. In our business, we have to adjust for it in price if we can. But that's not always possible.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Green.
I don't want to get in a debate with you, but I grew up, there were a lot of companies. But let's not blame it on attorneys, because there's corporate takeovers. I remember when there was an Anheuser-Busch. It's InBev. I remember when there was a McDonnell Douglas. It's Boeing. So let's not go to the extreme and blame it on employment law that corporate takeovers didn't have something to do with it, okay?
It's just an observation. Fair enough. Just an observation.
As someone that lives in St. Louis, I'm giving you an observation. We used to have a Boatman's Bank. About four banks later, it's a different bank. So observation as well.
We used to have the Cardinals football team, too. Senator Justice.
No, I agree with Senator Green, and I just would be curious, too, the law firm names that you see on the buildings downtown, if they aren't the law firms that are representing the corporations themselves and not the plaintiffs' firms that you're fearful are destroying the state. So just my opinion. As someone who works for one of the corporate law firms.
Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. I'd ask that someone to testify in opposition to the bill come forward. Good afternoon. Please identify yourself.
Yeah. My name is Wayne Lee. I'm a disability advocate, and I'm speaking here on behalf of myself and other persons who have disabilities and anyone else who must deal with a word that is being changed by this law. And it's being changed by changing another word. And that word is discrimination. That makes it discriminatory in and of itself. Because when you take the word discrimination, going ahead and switching motivational to contributory, that becomes discrimination in and of itself, as I was just saying. It'd take a room full of scientists to go ahead and make the determination as to just what is discriminatory. Just figuring it out, if you think about it. This is particularly true in a time when jobs are such a precious commodity. If Senate Bill 592 goes many further than this committee, discrimination will become much more difficult to prove in Missouri. In 2008, the Americans with Disabilities Act was amended, and it was done so to go ahead and make that law much clearer for judges to understand. And to go ahead and make things much more easy for them to understand in the courtroom. If this law goes any further, the Civil Rights Act, the 1973 Rehab Act, and the ADA, it will be hit with a barrier, and that barrier will be Senate Bill 592. In my written testimony, as you see, rather than clarifying those laws, what it does is weaken them. Unfortunately, the bill provides a pathway to discrimination, a pathway that at one point in time looked as though it was being sealed. I myself have epilepsy, and the seizures have plagued me all my life. I walk into some place, try to find employment. I can't really find that employment because nobody's going to hire somebody who has the seizure disorder that I do and has the seizure activity that I have, somewhere between 15 to 20 seizures in a week, if not more. And there are other people who have seizures much, much more so than I do, but not that often. Then there are people who have problems like not being able to hear, as the young lady indicated earlier, she was talking to you. Then, as you see, there are people in this room who cannot walk. Barriers do come in all shapes and sizes. Of the people who have disabilities in this nation, and they are the largest number of people in this country that have job problems. It's a very difficult thing for them to find employment. And right now, in a courtroom, they have a hard time getting any place. If this bill goes any place, their chances in a courtroom, not very good. It's my request that you not let that pathway be opened up completely.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Are there questions for Mr. Lee?
Imagine so.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. I'd ask that someone in favor of the bill come forward, please. Good afternoon, sir. Please identify yourself.
I'm Bill Ray, representing the Missouri United School Insurance Council. We have historically supported this bill and other reforms like it. We probably have, as members in the self-funded pool for insurance, most of the school districts in your senatorial district. So every one of those is familiar with our program. We have seen a rather remarkable increase in claims as a result of this change in the playing field. And as pointed out earlier, most of those have been settled before they ever went to trial. But as you can well imagine, the cost of those settlements have increased substantially. We support this bill. We'll continue to support it. And I wanted to be on record to share that with you.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Questions for Mr. Ray? Seeing none, thank you for testimony. I ask the next witness in opposition to the bill come forward, please. And if I might be able to judge, how many people are left to testify against the bill? And then for the bill? Okay, very good. Good afternoon. Will you please introduce yourself?
Good afternoon. Misty Snodgrass, Director of Government Relations for the American Cancer Society. And I know that the intent of this legislation is not to discriminate against cancer patients. However, the unintended consequences of this legislation would do so. And I know the sponsor has made changes. Some of them have been improvements. However, we do still have some significant concerns. Unfortunately, employment discrimination against cancer patients and survivors is all too common. And we are concerned that this bill restricts coverage of state anti-discrimination laws by excluding certain types of employers, setting a burden of proof in disability cases that is often difficult to meet, and unjustifiably restricting remedies. And so we believe that cancer patients deserve a place, workplace that is free of discrimination because employment provides the necessary funds to pay for housing and food as well as provide for their health insurance. The Missouri Human Rights Act is the primary law making it illegal to discriminate in employment, housing, and public accommodations, as well as in retaliation. In particular, it is the Missouri law that prohibits employers from discriminating against their employees who have medical disabilities such as cancer. This legislation will make it difficult to protect those jobs of individuals stricken with individuals stricken with cancer, and it will make it difficult for those employees to be able to recover and to make those employers to make reasonable accommodations for their employees that have cancer. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions to this witness? I actually have a question. You're part of a national organization.
Correct.
And we've heard some testimony to this idea. Well, the understanding with this legislation is it would take state law and put it back to federal standards, the American Civil Rights Acts. And are you aware of your national organization or other organizations such as yours that are working at the federal level to try to move the federal standards closer to Missouri standards?
We actually have. We've looked at several. There was a Harvard Law Review regarding the success of cancer patients as well as any disability in the federal courts, and it is not high. It is approximately 9% success rate, and it's not because they're taking it and there are not valid claims. It is just a very difficult avenue to move forward with if you are a cancer patient. And so, unfortunately, it may be moving to the federal standard. That's kind of a debate that's been going on several years, whether or not we are or we're not. But the matter is, even if you do take it to that federal standard is still a difficult burden for cancer patients.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony.
I do have one question real quick.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Ms.
I do have one question. Wouldn't the Americans with Disabilities Act actually afford additional protections in the workplace for somebody who has cancer or is a cancer survivor?
It provides some. The 2008 American Disabilities Act was actually the first one that covered cancer patients. Prior, it did not. However, not all employers in the state are covered by the American Disabilities Act due to size.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Snyders. Next witness in favor of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brent Tempel with the Missouri Restaurant Association. I think everything has all been previously said several times, and so we just want to go on record in support of this bill. Thank you. Very compelling one.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeremy LeFevre, registered lobbyist with the ACLU of Eastern Missouri. And again, like the witness just before me, most of the things that we would say against it have already been said. We just want to go on record as being opposed to this piece of legislation because it makes it more difficult for employees or former employees to seek damages when they are discriminated against.
Any questions to this gentleman? You're a national organization, are you not?
What's that?
ACLU is a national organization, is it not?
They have a national group of folks.
To the best of your knowledge, is there an effort being made on their part to move the federal standard closer to the state Missouri state standards?
I'm not sure of their work with the federal government, but I'll make sure that I chat with them about that and get that to you, Senator.
Thank you very much. Next witness, thank you for testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Chairman, Shannon Cooper representing the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce as well as Metropolitan Community Colleges. Just want to go on record in supporting the legislation as we've done in the past 3 years. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next witness against.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Quinn. I'm the Executive Director of the Missouri Association for Social Welfare. We're here to testify against Senate Bill 592. We were one of the groups that asked the governor to veto the similar legislation last year. We're happy that it did so. I just wanted to mention that Clifford Jones, whose portrait hangs in this room, when in the mid-50s, when he was the Republican leader over in the House, was one of the co-sponsors of the bill that created the Missouri Commission on Human Rights. And at that same time, he was also president of our organization, a little before my time, but just wanted to mention the history.
I guess there are some questions. Senator Schaefer.
Yeah. Do you think Cliff Jones believed that there was a right to jury trial under the statute as they passed it?
I'm not one that pretends to be able to apply the opinions of people long dead to current political issues, so I can't answer that.
Other questions? Again, Senator Schaefer.
Well, back when it was passed, I mean, how many decades went by that there was no right, specifically no right to jury trial before that right was found by the Supreme Court?
I don't know.
Several.
Thank you. Take your word for that. Thank you
very much. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next witness in favor. Actually, I represent Senator Jones's district.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Lodewigan with the Missouri Coalition School Administrators, just to go on record in favor of the bill.
Questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Otto Fagen representing Missouri National Education Association. We'd also like to go on record in opposition to Senate Bill 592. Just point out that our belief is that improper discrimination in the workplace should remain unlawful and with a realistic opportunity for the wrongdoer to be held to justice. Our concern, we also want to make sure that the court has the flexibility to craft a solution relevant to the facts of the matter in particular, and we would have a concern that those might be undermined by removal of individual liability and the damage caps, respectively. With that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Otto, do you think that the courts are seeking flexibility, or do you think the courts just want to apply the law as the legislature intends?
What I was speaking to was our hope that the legislation would give enough flexibility to craft a remedy that fits the facts. Sometimes, you know, if you could easily conceive of a situation where legislation we drafted so narrowly as to restrict what a court might feel like was an appropriate remedy.
But actually, the feedback that we receive from the courts often is that the legislation doesn't define our intent narrowly enough, and so they make an appeal to us to actually give them a little further direction.
That can also be the case.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? I have a question. You mentioned your testimony that your hope would be that discrimination would remain unlawful, and if this bill were to come to be and to pass, are you implying then that discrimination would then become lawful?
No, and that's why I particularly followed up by saying with realistic opportunity to hold a wrongdoer to justice. And actually, this bill is kind of one for three in that last year's bill, at the beginning of this bill it says because of, and it means a motivating factor, but last year's bill at the very, like the next to last subsection says, oh, but yeah, in the employment civil law cases, it's the motivating factor, which creates essentially an opportunity to evade prosecution if you can show that while you did, you know, you had bad intent, but you were able to show that that wasn't the only thing on your mind, you know, you had some other motivating factor. That's gone from this bill. But, you know, our point is to make sure there's a realistic opportunity. If you can have an opportunity to present facts to prove something, but the standard is such that it makes it essentially impossible to prevail, then you have a right, that is, discrimination would be unlawful, but you don't really have a realistic opportunity to hold the perpetrator to justice. So like I said, this bill's kind of one out of three in that that gotcha at the end has been removed, is at least the way we read the bill.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman, John Pelzer with Associated Builders and Contractors, and we would like to go on record as supporting this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Next witness in opposition to the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mary Ratliff, and I am president of the Missouri NAACP State Conference, representing 36 Missouri adult, youth, and college units from across Missouri. I'm here to urge the Senate to reject any effort to pass SB 592, which seeks to dismantle the protection to Missouri citizens who are unfairly treated. SB 592 has been crafted producing the same effect as last year's SB 188. We opposed this bill last year and oppose this bill which seeks to turn back civil rights laws over 50 years and making it easier and cheaper for employers to discriminate against Missourians because of their race, gender, age, disabilities, and beliefs. This unconscionable bill grants businesses and individual perpetrators immunity when found guilty of unlawful discrimination and removes the ability or limits the ability to hold them accountable for racism and bigotry. This law is intended to demoralize civil rights, worker rights, women rights, disability rights, and human rights. If this bill is passed, it will open the floodgate for other states to destroy the hard-fought progress in equality and human rights, undermining the very principles on which this country was built. This bill raised to the priority level, evidenced by the early scheduled hearing, facetiously claims to be an economic development issue bringing businesses and jobs to Missouri. I asked, are you willing to return to Jim Crow law at the expense of providing a safe haven for those who would seek to cause harm to our Missouri citizen by discriminating and disallowing them adequate recourse? This bill allows businesses to put a price tag on discrimination and avoid the real consequences such as punitive damages, which the courts provide as an appropriate form of recourse to punish egregious offenders. Had a tongue tie on that one. African Americans and all people of color are a fundamental part of the Missouri economy, which drives the success of business and industries. We are a major consumer of goods and services in the groceries, restaurant, and retail industry, and employees and entrepreneurs in corporation factories in all areas of economic development. Should this bill become law, the NAACP will have no alternative other than take the appropriate action deemed necessary to send a strong message because of the impact this bill will have, impacting the economy, jobs, and bringing unwarranted negative national attention to Missouri. Again, let's not forget the shameful history of the Missouri Dred Scott decision or be doomed to repeat it. I respectfully submitted Mary Ratliff, President of the Missouri NAACP State Conference.
Ms. Ratliff, thank you for
any
your
questions.
Testimony. There are questions, Ms. Ratliff?
Yes. Who asked me the question?
I was asking if there were questions, but I might ask you a question.
I'm sorry.
So your testimony today is to suggest that if this bill were to come to be, that we'd be reverting back to Jim Crow laws then?
Yes, sir, because of you are stripping the employees of the right to adequate punitive damage. You're also as a trained EEO counselor for the federal government, you're also reverting to placing the burden of proof on individuals who have less resources, less education, et cetera, to fight for their rights. And we talk about a level playing field. there is no equal playing field. There is no equal playing field for employers and employees.
Okay, very good. Then is it your organization's opinion then that, I mean, do you not celebrate the American Civil Liberties Act as passed in 64, then modified in 91? I mean, did your organization support the protections that were put in place by those, you know, historic acts of Congress?
We accept those actions put in place. We also understand that those were not to be, that we continue to support laws that when we see flaws, when we see, we hoped that it wouldn't stop there. We were very proud of Missouri. We were very proud of Missouri and its Human Rights Commission and the steps it's taken. And we don't want to be a state that when we talk about federal laws versus Missouri laws, and you ask me whether or not, you know, the federal laws are okay with us, yes, they are. The federal laws we still want in place, but we certainly hope that Missouri will do any and everything that it can to further human rights in the state of Missouri.
And then you just threatened us in that if this bill were to come to be, that your organization would take appropriate actions?
Yes, sir.
And so my question is, you've testified to the fact that you don't think that the American Civil Rights Acts go far enough. And so I'm just curious to know what steps is your organization taking at the federal level to, you know, respond appropriately to the lack of inaction at the federal level? Because your suggestion today is that if we go back to the federal standard, we're going back to Jim Crow laws. And if we were to go back to Jim Crow laws, then you would threaten us to, with whatever steps your organization might take. So I'm just curious, is in the past 2 or 3 years, what has your organization done at the federal level if, in fact, the American Civil Liberties Act ends up with us, I mean, Jim Crow, if that's where we're at the federal level? I'm just curious, what kind of steps does your organization take to try to rectify that situation?
My organization has a Mr. Hillary Shelton, who is our Washington Bureau person, who works with looking at those laws on every day and making making suggestions for improvement to it. Now, have that effectively changed anything so far? As far as the federal law is concerned, we, the NAACP, works relentless. All of the time to change laws that we look at, that we don't accept just the fact that we have federal laws and that they are to be there forever. If we see areas in which they need changing, we work to change those.
Very good. Other
Mr.
questions?
Chairman.
Senator Lemke.
Yeah, thank you. Just a quick follow-up to the chairman's question. So are you aware of any federal laws that have been introduced and supported by this current administration that would broaden federal law in the area of human rights?
I am not our attorney. I am not the head of our action. Mr. Hillary Shelton is that, along with Mr. Ben Jealous and our legal department. So I am not an attorney.
Sure.
To be able to present you with all of the, and I'm sure that if you want that information, I can certainly contact my legal department to give you that information, and I will be happy to do so.
That'd be very helpful. If you could provide that to the committee as far as any federal law that has been introduced under this administration that would broaden the human rights laws at the federal level.
I will be happy to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Is there someone still to come forward in support of the bill? Okay, we've exhausted that testimony then. Others opposed, if you would just come forward.
My name is Nimrod Chapel, and since I draw my Social Security check under Nimrod Chapel, I want to say senior, so you can refer to me as Nimrod, the old one. It's three Nimrods in Jeff City, so I'm Nimrod, the old one. What I would like to be here, I'm a registered lobbyist in the state of Missouri for the common man, for the people that work today and they cannot take off of work, and they their work, keep the lights burning, and people's salary that's employed by the state going. And I'm also here on behalf of the local chapter of the NAACP 4064. And you've heard much testimony, and very good testimony, very knowledgeable testimony. What I want to address today is the common man side of it to a humanitarian side of it. If you bear with me, my eyesight is not that good.
We'll certainly bear with you, but we would ask your testimony to be 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, I'll make it that. Okay, slavery in this country was 147 years plus or minus. Apartheid in this country was 78 years. So that's 225 years and then of slavery or either the disenfranchised of humans. Since 1954 have been somewhere around 58 years. I would like to say this. During slavery, when the first shipload of slaves came in 1619, the French was the only country, Frenchmen, would send their kids back to France. They would not allow them to be sold into slavery. They would not do that. So from that standpoint, I feel at this point, America, I was raised in apartheid. I'm 71 years old. I was raised in apartheid. I went through the civil rights era. I'm also a veteran. But I do think that we will be going backwards, not only for people of color. I feel there's only that whatever happened will fit into 4 categories. One, and it seemed the business sector has the most lobbyists, best paid lobbyists, et cetera, here to say that this should go. But since women of all color have been added, people with disabilities have been added, so as I look at it, there's several things that could happen. One is this legislative body do nothing. Just leave it be. Leave it as it is. Number two is have the courage, and it takes courage. It's easier for humans in my 70-some years observing to go with the flow. But to have, and it takes courage not to go with the flow, to rethink this and say that maybe this is not a good bill. And the last category is to say that I want to join that long rank of tradition and the group that would deprive others of their rights, mothers, daughters, wives, etc., and pass the bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Other questions? Well, thank you both for your testimony today as well as your service, sir. Is there anyone else that would like to testify in opposition?
Good afternoon. My name is Sean DeBria, registered lobbyist representing Paraquad and Missouri Centers for Independent Living. And we just simply want to go on a record in opposition to this bill for many of the reasons that have already been stated. Just one rhetorical point. If you pretend for a second that this is the federal civil rights law and you're reading it this way, but if you hold up to a mirror, it reverses. And that is indeed would be very accurate when you say it. It mirrors the civil rights law. It reverses the spirit, intent, and letter of the law, in our opinion, and turns back many of the protections that that law is intended to provide people with disabilities, people with race, women, et cetera. It takes us from a free market economy to a free from responsibility market, and we hope that you would think about it and not pass this out of committee. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard? Seeing none, then I thank you all for coming forward and testifying today.